Hello there, I'm Tim and he's John, and this is How to Murder Time, a podcast about games and things.
Hello, folks.
Watcher.
We're back.
We are. Back with some more talking.
More games.
Indeed.
So many games.
I play some stuff.
Actually, there's not very many games again, is there?
Well, it's the problem when you start liking one game too much a bit, really, isn't it? Yes, it's going to be a fair bit of Planetside 2 this show, but I have played other stuff, so there'll be more things than that to listen to as well.
Okay, so...
So Planetside 2, then.
Yes.
Yes. I've written tank column there. Yes, the five rounds rapid outfit there is going from strength to strength. I think we've got nearly 20 members. It's all very good and quite organised. And quite a lot of regular action as well all throughout the week. We're still doing the static nights on Sundays at 8 p.m. UK time. Get in touch with me via comments and stuff if you want in on that. Or Twitter as well, at Van Hemlock. Yeah, we did tank columns this week. We were on the Friday session. We thought, right, let's get the Mag Riders out.
Was that wise?
About as wise as any other way to play in there. But it was enormous fun until we came across a massive dug-in biolab where there was a lot of people with rocket launchers and C4 explosives and jetpacks and things. And it's something about the tanks in there. I don't know if players on the NC or TR sides will agree, but they just feel a lot more flimsy than they should. They seem quite easy for a small number of people with rocket launchers to take out. Maybe that's working as intended, but I'm just not seeing the sort of huge crushing benefit of having a big armoured column. We had about five Mag Riders all twos up with the gunners and everything. Heading north out, because it's the usual thing. They all get, we're on Indar, they all got bogged down at the crown in the middle, and then one side or another tends to backhack their way down the side of the map. So we thought, all right, well, we're going to clean up in the home territory. We got five Mag Riders on the go and went tootling up the column. Trouble is, we managed to time it just when the main zerg of bored independent players all decided to go piling up there as well, and it was a horrific traffic jam of people running each other over and getting shot in the back by a tank behind you trying to get their go at the kills and stuff. Much more traffic control, I think. We need some sort of basic driving test of some sort with
you
a theory
always
component.
Drive on the left side of the island.
Well, yes, I'm not sure if Vanu drive on the left or the right, but with hover tanks, they tend to just drive straight over everything.
Yeah, despite, like the French.
Despite it hovering, it will crush infantry that get caught under the middle of it. I mean, there's a bit more leeway than most normal tanks with the sliding about and things, but it was quite good fun. The main front gun on the Mag Rider is a pretty hefty one-shot blob of plasma thing that's designed for anti-vehicle work, and that works quite well in an artillery capacity. Default gun on top of the Mag Rider is a fairly handy all-purpose dual machine gun thing. I managed to upgrade mine a bit, though. I'll talk about that in a minute. But we got about three or four outposts in a row where we just had to sit at the back while the traffic dispersed, and we didn't really get out of the tanks or do much, and the base just got, the little outposts got captured in short order. And then we went over the top of a rise to one of the bio labs, and they were ready for us, my God. It was just horrific. Tanks going up over the top of the hill and boom, gone, you know. I mean, that wasn't even mines either. It seems like heavy assault is quite a popular class choice for most general purpose work in that game, and heavy assault get a rocket launcher as a default option in their second weapon slot. So there's a lot of explosives out there, and our tanks didn't last too well. The problem is the resource allocation and the requisition time, as we were trying to sort of swap over and have our drivers then become gunners so that the other resource timer could be used and everything. But even so, it was quite difficult to organise a Mag Rider push, or I suppose a Prowler or Vanguard push, because they're only available in certain circumstances. You need a connected tech plant to your little section of hexagons to be able to get them. Otherwise, you have to go all the way back to the warp gate or just take lightnings. Lightnings are even worse. But so we did all right. We got quite a few bases captured, but we just sort of hit on the rock of very many infantry with rocket launchers dug in at a biolab and ended up having to regroup and try the galaxy again, which is always a lot of fun. A lot more work with the galaxies and sunderers than Mag Riders. I think we will be doing tanks again on a fairly regular basis, but they really aren't as powerful as you'd imagine. You've either got way too many and they start to obstruct each other, or you don't have enough and they're just fodder for people with rocket launchers and C4 charges. But enjoying that anyway, it's good fun. I do like the tanks. So we had the galaxy on the go, more galaxy dropping, Sunderers and stuff. It's all going well. It's sort of, you know, quite difficult to come up with individual stories of awesome in there, because so much of just the day-to-day play is quite awesome all the way through. Mm. I got my cash up tokens in the end, my station cash.
Excellent. So you actually paid for the game now?
Yeah, I have paid for the game. I put about 40 quid down and got about 5,000 station cash, somewhere around there, some ballpark figures there.
So do you now have your skull mask?
No, I've not paid any points towards any of the cosmetic stuff, camouflage or skull masks or the horn for the Sunderer, because, well, for starters, for the horn, you can just hold down number pad 4 and bellow honk honk into the proximity chat, and that does the work pretty well. I'm buying guns. I'm trying to keep the station cash for gunnery at the moment. I got quite good, did a fair bit of shopping, got quite a few bits and pieces. You might see my blog post about some of the rifles I got. I'm gonna do some more posts on, well, because the thing with the free to play is it's all gone to cash shop now.
Yes.
So we have lots and lots of little things that need reviewing rather than entire MMOs in one go. And I don't see many people out there reviewing bits and pieces from specific cash shops. They'll either launch into a massive tirade about how free-to-play is bad for everyone, or they just won't touch on this stuff at all, even if they like the idea. So I've started trying to put a few little reviews of items you can buy in on the blog there. I'll be doing a fair few more of those as well. So I got the Solstice SF, which is an upgrade for the engineer. Quite a good sort of machine gun carbine thing.
Cool.
The cool thing with that is it has underneath grenade launcher. And when you get that and unlock the grenade bit for another 100 points, it comes up as another weapon on your 1, 2, 3, 4 select weapon thing. And of course, the engineer has an infinite ammo pack deployable thing. So you drop one of those, you sit on top of that, and then you just start firing off grenades like over and over out of the doors of spawn rooms or whatever.
That seems really unsporting.
It's quite powerful, yeah. You could put an underbarrel shotgun on there instead, an underbarrel smoke grenade launcher. I haven't used those yet, but it's a good all round utility knife of a gun. I also got the Eidolon battle rifle, which allows sniping when you're not a sniper, which is nice. Heavy assault and engineer can both use those. And it's just this really highly precise, high-powered rifle that doesn't have a lot of sort of... It's a semi-automatic, so you can't just, like, hose the area, but it can hit at incredible ranges comparable to the basic sniper gun. So that's quite good. You need to get the 6x scope to put on that to make that work well. And it does. It's good for harrying people from way up on top of canyon walls and stuff.
What more do you need?
It is. I don't like getting up too close too often because they're often better than me in that kind of manic spray and pray circle strafe.
Also, sometimes they're really insulting. I kill you with a knife.
The knife is really powerful. Don't overlook the knife. It will kill you in about 2 hits from full health if you can get close enough to do the job, of course. But and also silent kill as well, which can be useful for infiltrators and so on. I got a few of the turret guns as well. One of the new things, this is fairly recent in the cash shop, is a flak cannon for the roof of the Sunderer.
Okay.
Dedicated anti-air gun. It fires. It's a bit like the Skyguard. I'm not sure if it fires quite as fast and quite as hard as the Skyguard, but it's that kind of thing. And you can put two of those on top of the Sunderer, and I unlocked both. Of course, you have to buy both separately, which I think is a bit cheeky, rather than unlocking the gun en masse, as it were. You have to unlock it in its primary and its secondary versions.
That is really...
Yeah, so they charge you twice for that, really, which is a shame. But I tend to put both of those on top of the Sunderer. And I was experimenting with an anti-air Sunderer rather than the usual lumber out to the battle and deploy a spawn point and then refuel, rearm nearby vehicles. I thought, no, let's put some armour plates on it, let's put smoke launchers on it, which are really cool as well. When you get the missile locks, you hit the button and big poof, big cloud of grey smoke comes out, shrouding the vehicle briefly.
How does that stop radar?
Well, I don't know. Obviously, these
how does that stop infrared?
These highly sophisticated, futuristic locking-on rocket launchers are confused by smoke. It's probably full of nanites or vitamin D or something. But that gives you a bit of a respite when they're trying to lock on with rockets and stuff. So I put all that on there, and then the two anti-air on that, and I think me, Wild, and Morphe went out and just started doing big loops around the back while the rest of our Sunderers were all trying to rush in and get the deployment going. And it works really well. My gunners were getting kills with these weapons, which I think is the mark of a useful purchase.
I think so, yes.
Yeah. As long as you're both on both your gunners are on the ball.
How much is one enemy life worth, then? In station cash.
They don't pay in station cash. I mean, you get one cert every 250 XP, and I honestly am so surprised and pleased at making a kill that I forget to make a note of what the number is. So I've no idea. I've no idea when what that is in certs per death and so on. But it's a useful tool, particularly because the big problem I find when I drive a lot of Sunderers around, try and get spawn points and so on, get people from A to B. And the big problem I always find is that when one lone enemy mosquito or reaver sees you and just starts following along merrily, picking away at you and blows you up.
Yeah,
the guns that come, the stock guns on the Sunderer will do some damage to them, but they're very hard to hit moving air targets with that kind of thing. So proximity burst, explodey flak, that tends to make a mosquito.
They get surprised when you have these on it?
They do. Well, the weapon system itself's fairly new, so many air cavalry pilots don't realise that a Sunderer can put out nearly as much, if not more, damage than a Skyguard if it's set up right. And it certainly chases them away. Anyway, we've had a lot less being farmed from the air incidents, and even the cocky ones who come in with full rocket spam blazing, they tend not to be able to make a second pass to finish us off, especially with the armor modules as well. Put the armor on instead of rearming vehicles, and you suddenly become quite an offensive unit. Yeah. And they really don't expect it from a Sunderer. And of course, it's still a Sunderer. You can still transport 12 people from A to B, but you've got a lot more air cover. There's some grenade launchers you can put on top. I'm not convinced with those, because
it's going to be really hard to hit an aircraft with those.
Well, absolutely, yeah. But also, I mean, if you see an enemy tank coming the other way when you're in a Sunderer, your best bet is to just try and foot down and swerve lots and get the hell out of the way. Hopefully, as is often the case with our Sunderer, there's quite a few blokes with rocket launchers in it, and they can jump out and start firing at the tank if they come across it. But in a Sunderer versus Prowler or Vanguard fight, you're just not going to win going toe to toe. And there's not an awful lot you can put on top and do to the Sunderer to make it, you know, stand one on one against a heavy tank. So generally, speed and agility are your best bets there, and those are different subsystems anyway. So I think probably your best, I mean, infantry can be a problem, but again, if you've got load of lads with guns on board, they can all jump out while moving without taking any real damage, and they can start firing back. And of course, everyone will go for the Sunderer because it's a big juicy target, but then all your guys get to where they're going and win. So, you know, I think the most useful thing that you can put on top of the Sunderer is the anti-air, because the air cavalry are fragile but deadly, whereas tanks are not fragile and also deadly, so there's not a lot you can do to just set yourself up as an anti-tank Sunderer in the first place. You just don't have enough heavy ordnance to go on top. That may change. We might start to see lightning cannons turn up. I remember in Planet Side 1, the Deliverer, the great big variants on the Sunderer, you could fit them. I think it had two 75mm guns, which was the same primary armament as the Lightning in Planetside 1. So you could actually set it up as a fairly powerful tank, but it just didn't have the manoeuvrability or survivability even there. I pimped up the Galaxy big time as well. I got four guns for that. That's where a large amount of my station cash went. It's a tricky thing, because with large multi-crewed vehicles, you're expected to put your certs and or station cash down to make somebody else's gameplay more fun.
Yes.
Because you're not, there's a couple of vehicles in there where you are driver and gunner, but in most of the big stuff, you are basically the driver. Other people are going to be using the guns you've paid for. So
does it work that whenever you get the vehicle, you get your upgrades?
Yes, the upgrades depend on the vehicle. I mean, I don't know if they could put some kind of system in where you could on the fly upgrade the guns when a new gunner gets in the thing.
I suspect they probably wouldn't want to.
Well, there's no way to refit vehicles that have already been spawned.
Yeah.
So you can't go to a place and swap modules whilst the vehicle's up and running. You just have to wait for it to be killed and then wait to get the next one and make sure you've got the right module set up on that one. I'd like to see re-equipping for vehicles available. They used to have that in Planet Side 1 with those big stupid robots. You could find a big terminal thing and swap guns over. But then most of the vehicles in Planet Side 1 weren't modular anyway. What you got was what you had. But yeah, so it does take, if you're soloing a lot in Planet Side 1, you're really not going to be that inclined to buy the big cool guns for someone else to hop in and use. I mean, yes, you do get shared kill XP. I mean, I got quite a lot of that, actually. The Galaxy I've fitted up, it's got two sort of mortar-type rocket launchery things on the sides for ground targets. And then I think the back and on top, I've fitted some quite powerful anti-air cannons in there now. And so people have been getting kills in it. That's the thing. I mean, mostly I just want the Galaxy to stay alive long enough to get me over the drop zone so that the troops can get out and sort the target out. But, you know, I don't really think about it surviving much past that. But we tried having some of the gunners stay in. And as we were going around doing the loop and stuff, some of the air cavalry picked us up and started chasing. And we were shooting them down. Some of my gunners were actually shooting targets down with the stuff I'd put on the Galaxy, which was really rewarding, really satisfying. It's very much a team. You either got to be a team player and have regular people always using your vehicles, or you've got to be quite altruistic, really, if you're going to do it as a sort of solo pickup thing. So the Mag Rider as well. I got the Sauron laser cannon for the top of that. That's the big... It's like a massive anti-vehicle sniper. It's got a horrifically accurate long-range punch, and it can take... It will one-hit infantry, but that's a bit of a waste of its power. But it's a fantastic anti-tank weapon. I put a few zoom blocks on that as well, and that helps. But again, you know, if you're going to buy one of those and then just sort of mill about in the warp gate and hope randoms get in and can shoot properly, you know, that might be a bit of a waste. It depends if you've kitted yourself out adequately. I think you can upgrade the front gun on the Mag Rider as well, which is what the driver gets to play with. But it is an odd system because you're basically paying real hard cash, real money, as it were, to upgrade bits and pieces that you're not going to be using, because you have to drive the vehicle to even get those guns in play, as it were. I mean, you can certainly park up and switch to a gunner spot, but that's usually a recipe for casual rocket death.
Yes.
People used to do that a lot in Planetside 1. In Planetside 1, none of the really big tanks had a front driver's gun. It was all on the turret, and you'd expect player number 2 to be dealing with all the shooting. So you'd quite often see soloists take one of these tanks out, go park up on a hill and get in the turret. And you've absolutely sacrificed all your mobility at that point. And, you know, their lifespans can be measured in minutes from there, even if they do manage to land some shells on people. So yeah, it's all about coordination, about working as a team. And certainly our 5-round rapids folks are coming along, and I'm seeing some good stuff. I'm very proud of them all. So yeah, what else did I get? I think that was about it for the cash shop gunnery. I mean, by the time I'd gone and got some decent stuff for most of the vehicles, I haven't got anything for the Flash or the Liberator or the Lightning, but I imagine those are things I need to save up for. I'm kicking myself, though, because one thing I did want to get was the second anti-air arm for the Max suit.
That would have been useful.
Yeah, that's going to be another 1,000 certs. So. But it's useful to have something to save up for. But the trouble is, there's so many things I want to buy that are not available for station cash. Things like upgrading armour modules for various vehicles, reacquisition timers.
So let me get this right. Now you're saying it's not pay to win.
Oh no, I don't necessarily want to be able to just click my fingers, put down a credit card and unlock everything. That would be stupid, because for me, saving up for all these bits and pieces is very much a form of in-game progression for me. It's part of the main why I'm there, the thing I'm working towards, you know. I mean, one of the reasons I don't like badly done cash shoppery is that because it can drastically shorten the duration of a game that you're enjoying. You know, you buy your way to the end and then you think, oh, you know. So yes. So there's Planetside 2 has a great deal of things that you just can't buy anyway, but that you can work towards, and I think that's good. I think it's healthy, and that's stuff I'm wanting to say. Well, there's so many bits and pieces I need to get or want to get, you know. And that's good. I like it. It's gonna keep me going for a while. But yes, very much enjoying that. I reckon Guild Wars 2 story finished. Yes. Yes, we finally did. The Ruins of Arrar, the last dungeon. You'll know it in your little green side of the screen log as victory or death, brackets kill Zaitan. And we did it. We went and we got five people together. There was 4 of us regularly picking about. We managed to coax Melmoth out of retirement briefly to get our 5th man there. We had a go at it the week before with 4 of us and got reasonably far, but you do need a full team, really, to get the oomph you need to get through some of this stuff. It's not too bad. I don't know if it worked or not, really. I mean, I'm quite jaded to the whole game already, so I'm not quite sure if I'm in the best position to impartially judge the very last culmination of the story game. It's a big old assault on Zaitan at the far end on the Drowned Kingdom of Orr. And it basically, I don't really want to talk about the story because I think a lot of people still haven't managed to find it. We got outside Arrar to get set up and waiting for people to show up and stuff. And there was these other 2 people there. And one of them, he was, you know, just sort of bitterly moaning in local about having been a month standing outside this place trying to find pickup groups. Ooh. And stuff. Well, I think the problem is, I mean, we're quite late at it, to be honest. I think all the overachievers have long since blasted through there and now only bother doing the thing on explorable mode, which is where all the cool and rare notice. Doing it in story mode is a slightly different experience. It's slightly lower leveled and generally a lot more cinematic. There's a lot more cutscenes and there's less. Some of the bosses are scaled back or not there at all, I think. So, but we're doing it in Explorer one mode. I felt bad, but I thought, well, no, we've already got a full team, and I'm not, you know, not going to do this twice if I don't have to. So we all went in, and it starts off, yeah, like I say, I don't really want to explain what goes on in there too much, but there's quite a lot of cinematic on rails, watching it all happen type of thing. It's like they've tried to make some kind of interactive cutscene rather than a straight dungeon raid or whatever. Okay. Mind you, I haven't done a straight dungeon raid in a very long time, so I probably don't even know what that entails anymore, but there's a number of bosses scattered throughout. There's like three you have to do right at the start. They're all fairly straightforward. There's a little bit of dance. They've got some quirky, strange status effects on that you need to read the tooltips for, but on the whole, nothing too challenging there. Then there's a big old on rails bit involving airships and using fixed emplacement guns to sort stuff out, and that was all right, but we found some fantastic bugs there already. Nothing that sort of broke the entire game, as it were, although you do tend to end up in combat through pretty much all of the mission except for a few points, which means that if the entire team wipes, it's back to the start because you can't respawn while in combat or something, can't you? It was causing us troubles, and the first week we tried it, we spent a good couple of hours in there trying to work out how to sort it all out. This final run-through where we succeeded went through in about an hour. It's quite long. We clipped along and knew what we were doing and got it all right, and even so, it took about an hour or so. It's quite a commitment of time to get the story mode done, so you'll need to start early in the evening if you want to make sure you get there in time. And there's a lot of on-rails stuff with airships and so on, and there's one or two quite technical boss fights. Wasn't that dancey, but it took us a few goes to work out what was going on and how to do it properly. It's the one with the mouth of Zaitan and the orbs of fire and stuff, and you
wasn't that Harry Potter?
Very much, yeah. You need to basically, I'll give you some clues and spoilers. You'll need to range for that one. Don't get near the damn thing. Every class, even the warrior, gets a bow, you know, so everyone can work at maximum range. You want to be between the 900 and 1200 range bands for doing your work there, and just try massively circle strafing round and round it, as well as work doing the thing you need to work out to actually damage him and stuff. I won't tell you what that is. You can work that out yourselves. But then we got through that. Then it was another bit of on rails and more stuff with fixed gun emplacements. Although the trick there is that you need to divide your team up to have some deck clearance as well as manning the guns. And, you know, your own team will decide probably how that needs to be distributed. But you can't, if you try and all use the guns, then a whole load of stuff spawns on the deck and you have to clear that up so that the gunners can get on with their bit. And then there's some things happen and some plot and some stuff and hooray, we won. And there was just a massive sense of anticlimax in our group. But I think that was mostly because our group's comprised of people who really want to have finished the game by now. You know, we felt like many of us had felt that we'd been there too long and that it had dragged on, that we're a bit tired and we want to do something else with our gaming time now. So, and, you know, I think the fact that it's only my OCD completionism that managed to drive us to organise and try and get it finished, I think. But so, ticking the box, the big bad was vanquished. We got 26 silver for that.
Wow.
Yeah, as a sort of context, well, I don't know what that compares to an average event completion tick at level 30 or so. it was just, you know, the sheer scale they tried to build this thing up with and the cinematic heroism of it all. You'd be expecting chests and chests of gold or you know, and it sort of so obviously just feeds into the standard dish out some appropriate loot subroutines at that point that you just think, well, whatever. I got a hood that I already had a better one of, and then at the end they give you a thingy like in Guild Wars 1 that you can swap for a souvenir weapon. What used to be the green weapons in Guild Wars 1, they do something similar in there. And that weapon wasn't as good as the one I went into the place with. So, you know, I'd massively overgeared well before that point because of this just absolute pandemonium of what the market is these days. So, and there we go. You know, a little bit of cutscene, a little bit of chat with Traherne. Hooray. And then done. And, you know, then what?
Exit, uninstall, move on.
Well, yeah, I've kept it uninstalled because I still haven't finished my world completion star. I have absolutely everything I need now except for our server to have the right corner of the Eternal Battlegrounds in the weekly lottery. I popped in there today to see if there was any hope of trying to just do it properly, and there's not. The Eternal Battlegrounds is so precisely balanced with Zerg versus Zerg combat, there's absolutely no way I'm going to get in their starter base until it becomes our starter base through natural rotation. So I'm going to keep the thing installed, and I bloody well get it. Mind you, this could be a massive conspiracy. Maybe they listen to the show and are going to ensure that Pike and Square never gets to the blue corner ever again. In which case, I will be a loyal customer of theirs forever, and they can count me on all their success stats, despite me basically having reached the point where I hate it now.
Apart from the fact that you won't be paying them any money.
Yes, and certainly won't be paying them any money. But having said all that, you know, I think, you know, I to be honest, I feel quite annoyed that they force a story mode go-a-rah on solo players to get their personal story finished. I'm quite happy there being a dungeon story, you know, that you can work along, yeah, which is all about grouping and all about pick-up groups and stuff. But, you know, there are a lot of people in there who just like a bit of solo pottering about, and yes, I know, why play an MMO for you if you're only solo? Well, for many and complicated reasons, that's why. And I just think that it's a real shame that there wasn't a soloable end to the story where it just leaves you. Yeah, that poor bugger stood outside that dungeon. You know, he'd been there. I don't know. I didn't really chat to him and ask a lot of details, but I can imagine he'd been there on and off. You know, right? Oh, what shall I do today? Pop into Guild Wars and see if I can find a pickup group that will get this last thing done. You know, it wasn't technically very difficult. I mean, many of our characters are quite highly over-specced at the top end, so you know, there was capable of face rolling it a bit. But we've done dungeons before, and we know the kinds of things to look out for in a boss fight dance. But it wasn't vastly difficult, I don't think. And I know, and when I say that, I know I'm not that great at dungeon raiding. So if anyone listening is stuck on, right, so Pick and Square EU server, you'll need to be on that one, and you'll need to be level 80 and have your story finished up to victory or death, which is essentially the Arar thing. But if anyone listening is in that position and still hasn't managed to tick off their personal story, I'm quite happy to try and organise some little playthroughs of that if anyone needs a hand. There's a couple of folks who will quite happily come along and help people out, and we'll see if we can get through it all. You know, I'm not doing Arar explorable mode. This is not about loot or anything like that. But if you're ordinarily a solo who doesn't like pickup grouping and find yourself stuck on the very end of Guild Wars 2, then chip in comments on this thread or get in touch via Twitter, and we'll see what we can arrange. And my little public service there.
Yes, I know.
Personally, I'm going to just keep popping in once a week to see if I've got the right corner of Eternal Battlegrounds, but after that, I think I'm probably done with it, but I'll leave it installed for now. I'm just absolutely not interested at all in this Flame and Frost update that's going on at the moment.
What's the Flame and Frost update?
I have no idea. There's some new menace and some thing going on in some of the low-level zones and some scaling and some tokens and probably another currency to collect and a load of other rubbish. Don't care, you know. Because that is very much like the usual thing. It's like they've been doing all along. They set up this massive epic cinematic storyline that the whole world is in danger, and then every sort of 6 weeks they decide to take a break from that, come and do some fun games with hoops and snowmen and whatever, you know, pumpkins. You know, it's just, I will decide how seriously I take your game world, you know. I'm really getting annoyed with MMOs that just devolve into a massive bunch of contemporary shout-outs and in-jokes all the way along, you know?
Yeah.
Make a serious world, and that at least lets people who want to take it seriously, or if I want to not take it seriously, then I shall do so with my friends on Mumble, you know? I don't want the whole world itself nudging and winking at me about how it's all just a game, you know? It's difficult. Anyway, enough about that. I've played some other stuff. I had a bit of a binge on Good Old Games.
There's no better way to binge.
I really like Good Old Games. I have forgiven them for that prank they played back about, what, 3 years ago now?
Yeah.
The online game service that suddenly decides to put a 404 page up for giggles one day and say they've closed. Turned out to be a lie. So I popped on there. I was, I don't know why I went in there, really. I think just to hit a sting of nostalgia, like usual. And I went in there and I bought Thief, all three Thief games, and both Dungeon Keeper games as well. And this is stupid, because these are five games that I own all of already. Well, maybe not Dungeon Keeper 2. I think I might borrow that from you. But Point being is that I'm basically paying money again for games I already own, and that used to make me really cross. But what I've realised what I'm paying for is what do you got there? He's fired up some good old games game there.
Yeah,
I don't recognise
it. Good old games at all. Yeah, keep going.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, what I'm paying for, I suppose, is for the fine folks at Good Old Games to sort out the rubbish, set DOSBox up, yeah. Pass sound driver IRQs through, that old DOSForge EW thing they've got a good handle on. They tend to remove the DRM from everything as well, legally, I imagine. Is that some sort of Wing Commander game?
It's the first Wing Commander, and wow. It's running on a Mac.
Oh, they do Mac games, do they?
Well, once you're in a DOSBox.
Oh, DOSBox works on Mac?
Yeah.
Of course. All right, fair enough. Yeah, so I've started to not be quite so angry about buying the same game three or four times over its career, but because, yes, I mean, I'm a bit leery of online services controlling my games, like GOG and Steam and so on, but they provide installers that work on modern PCs. Well, yep. I say modern, it's Windows Vista, but, you know, there you go. And I can just play this stuff. It's fantastic. I have not played Dungeon Keeper in a very long time, and I fired it up, and it's a bit low res, but that's okay. That's all part of the charm. And I've just totally forgotten how fantastic and innovative Dungeon Keeper was. I mean, I don't know how old it was. Perhaps you could find out.
It was in the 90s.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's your sort of management game, bit of a sort of RTS-y elements to it all. You're raising creatures and building a dungeon full of facilities to make the creatures work better, and the creatures go off and attack other creatures or heroes from the upper world or other dungeon keepers with their own monsters. And you're sort of basically contesting for supremacy on these big underground maps, digging tunnels and creating treasure rooms and traps and doors and all the rest of it. And that's all very well. And then you've got the possession spell. And that blew my mind back then. It still does now. Basically, you can pick one of your monsters and suddenly, boom, you're in first-person view. And you can use their attacks. You can move around the dungeon. It's not quite graphically up there, but, you know, it's a step in the right direction. And it's just amazing, you know. It's just a really simple idea, worked very well. Yep. And of course, the voice acting's very good. Is it Richard Ridings, is it? The voice of the keeper there? The assistant? Your mentor fella? Because there was talk that he'd been signed up for some sort of spiritual successor.
Yes, they're making the third one.
Some sort of Kickstarter thing.
Yeah, they kickstarted the third one successfully, I believe. Mm. Well away from Lionhead, as was, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there is no Lionhead anymore.
Well, it'll be an entirely different name, but it should play quite similar. I remember seeing some hokey, quite poorly reviewed Dungeon Keeper knockoff turn up on Steam not so long ago, a year ago or so, and that didn't go down too well. But the basic game, very good fun. I've not played 2 yet. I haven't got it and installed it. I haven't fired that up yet. I'm going to play through the first one first.
You know the best thing about
2 is much better than 1, though, I do remember.
They come down really quickly.
Yeah.
You're not waiting for hours.
Except Thief Deadly Shadows, which was huge.
Oh, okay.
But that's quite a recent one. Oh, God. Good old games, Thief Deadly Shadows. I remember when that came out. It's making me feel old. Yes, yeah, so I got the Thief games as well.
I remember Dungeon Keeper came out.
Dungeon Keeper? Wow. Yeah, yeah, I do remember it. Yeah. But it's just nice to be able to get back at these really old things and have them just reliably work. Not you don't have to muck about with your own setup and stuff. Although, certainly Dungeon Keeper, you need to, if you're using their DOSBox that they bundle up with it, you'll need to press Control F11 a few times to bring the cycles count down. Because back in the day, they just designed games to run as fast as the machine would allow.
Yeah.
Which is quite comical in this day and age when you see them all sort of imps zooming across the screen so fast you can't click on them and that sort of thing. So you can slow it down by Control F11. I think Control F12 brings the cycles back up again if you need it to speed up. But it's just a really good idea, well executed. That was always Bullfrog's thing, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
And of course, Dungeon Keeper 2, broadly similar sort of thing, but they've greatly updated the engine for it. It's a lot sharper, a lot less sprites going on in there. I suppose, yeah, Evil Genius, I suppose, is the one to look out for if you want the more modern version of that kind of thing. It's by different people, but essentially it's exactly the same gameplay, but with a 60s spy motif.
Who was Evil Genius by?
I can't remember. I've got that somewhere, but I'd probably have to download that on Good Old Games as well to get it to work again.
I think it was by somebody who just got sold. Anyway, yep.
A fine game, but not a classic Hall of Fame game like the other set I got. I got Thief Gold, Thief to the Metal Age, and Thief Deadly Shadows. They got all three on Good Old Games, presumably all patched up and DDRM'd as required. I'm starting to play through all that again. I've written Dark Project there. I'm basically going to play through the entire Thief series on full hardest difficulty.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
It's
you found some stuff on the interweb.
Currently published by Rebellion Developments.
Evil Genius. All righty.
It used to be Sierra, but it got bought by Rebellion. Of course, Rebellion are really cool because what property do they own?
I don't know. You'll have to help me out here. I don't really follow this stuff.
They own several things. They, of course, did the AVP game.
Oh, right. I thought it was Real Time Worlds.
No, the original.
Oh, right. Okay.
And also, they own Judge Dredd.
Ah, okay. There we go.
As in everything.
So Judge Dredd will be very much like hollowing out a volcano from an isometric top-down view and pushing minions
They've
about.
They've never managed to make a good Judge Dredd game, though. I don't know why. Anyway, I digress.
Anyway, so yes, I'm going to play through the entire Thief series on full difficulty because I just love the Thief series. I think what sent me after these was playing Skyrim as a skulky character and getting to the point where the pointages are all so high that it's no longer challenging. I can just stand in front of people, punch them in the face, steal their stuff, and no one will notice anymore. And I was thinking, this stealth gameplay in Skyrim is a little bit easy, and I thought, I remember where they do it properly.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I basically bought the whole Thief series again and playing through.
How many times is that you bought it now?
I don't know. I think it's probably only the second time for each game, which is still one time too many if you ask me. But Thief, particularly on extreme difficulty, is the quintessential stealth em up. I mean,
it
long
is.
Before Splinter Cell came along or Assassin's Creed or any of that sort of thing, you know, here was a gameplay in the sort of late 90s where you were not really supposed to run through with a sword killing everyone. I mean, the sword gameplay, there's a little training mission right at the very start of it all, and they make you use the sword on a guard just to practice. And it's quite clunky, to be honest. You can block, certainly. You can hit either side and go for overhand swings and stuff. But if you're using the sword at all in Thief, you've done something wrong, generally, especially on the very hard difficulty levels, where in expert mode, it will always generally always add a new condition, you must not kill anyone.
Yeah.
So I use the blackjack, which does silent takedowns and doesn't make you more visible while it's active. So but then a lot of the design of Thief is quite clever in that there's a lot of monster types in there who you just can't blackjack. There's zombies wandering around and these sort of reptilian dinosaur Burrick type monsters and stuff. So on the whole, you're supposed to just not be seen, get to the end without engaging in combat. And it was such a breath of fresh air back in the day, a really well-constructed and interesting fantasy steampunk world where killing was not the point. I mean, I don't know where Deus Ex sort of fits into all that. Was Thief came before Deus Ex or vice versa?
Oh, I forget what the exact... They were intertwined, weren't they?
Yeah, the same team. Yeah. And Deus Ex was a much
Deus
more
Ex
contemporary
was
thing.
First. Mm. I could be wrong about that.
I don't know, but just a fantastic change of pace for my normal gaming, really. I'm going to go through the whole of them. I mean, I've played the first sort of eight or so levels of Thief a lot before I usually lose interest and go and play something else, but I'm determined to go through it all the way so that I can play Thief 2 again, which I haven't played in a very long time. Thief 2 is a direct sequel. It follows on from the events of the first game, how the whole city's come out of balance because what you did in the first game, and now you're sort of trying to work to restore that balance in some fashion, and you get caught up in the usual kinds of thing, and there's a big old conspiracy amongst the guards and the law enforcement and everything. And Thief 2, I think, is probably a stronger game. It's a very similar engine, slightly higher res. There's the AI is much improved and a lot more gadgets and interesting sorts of mission in there. Deadly Shadows, the third game, is an entirely big departure. I mean, I believe it's most of the same team, but they had a whole new engine for it.
It was a different company at that point because Iron Storm had gone.
But Deadly Shadows is very good. They introduce in that one a kind of not really open world, but there's a series of persistent zones within the centre of the city that you can just go in and start skulking around and stealing stuff in, as well as all the little side missions which advance the main story. And the Deadly Shadows includes the Shalebridge Cradle level, which is possibly one of the most terrifying computer game experiences I can ever remember.
Isn't it?
Yes, it's the asylum that got burnt down and is full of ghosts and also zombies, and also it's, you know, dark magics going on and everything, and you're supposed to go in there and do some stuff, and it was absolutely horrific. And I not often I'm genuinely scared by computer games. That level was one of them. And also, I think, was it Call of Cthulhu, Dark Corners of the Earth? That one's a terrifying game if you can find it. Quite buggy but terrifying. I think that's a Bethesda one, that. But Deadly Shadows, very good. I see talk of Thief 4. There is a Thief 4 website, and they've confirmed they've started development, but we just don't know almost anything else about it. Is it Eidos Montreal, is it?
Possibly. It's an interesting game.
That's the team that bought us Assassin's Creed, so it should be interesting.
Not out in the next year.
No.
Next 12 months.
No.
Then it's a next-gen title.
Well, probably, yeah. Maybe that's what they're holding on for or anything like that. I don't know. But I'm really, really looking forward to seeing what comes out with that, because the Thief series is one of my all-time Hall of Fame favourite game series.
Yeah.
Up there with System Shock. Funnily enough, who by the same people. Looking Glass Studios and their descendants. Very good. So that's pretty much what I've been up to. Why don't you talk a bit about a thing you've done?
I've played a couple of games.
Yep.
Although quite a lot of it I would put down to research, which means I've been putting myself through pain with iPhone games.
Research.
But to start with, let's cover Dishonored.
Dishonored, okay.
Which is a game very much like Thief in many
ways. Yeah, I'd heard a lot of good things about it. I just haven't really gotten around to looking at it, to be honest.
I was catching up. I noticed that Adam Sessler had got a job at Red 3 Games.
Okay.
And so I was going back through his... he used to do something called Sessler Soapbox, which was just a weekly video thing when he worked at... G4, whatever it is. The G4 Security, isn't it? Anyway, whatever the that TV station in America that's just gone away was and right, it's now Esquire.
TV, not my department.
So I was going back through. He started doing new ones, so I was going back. So he says quite a lot of clever stuff and also some stupid stuff, but there you go. And I noticed that they kept mentioning Dishonored as game... as one of the Game of the Year choices, and I thought, oh yeah, I was going to buy that, wasn't I? So I bought it, £20 Amazon, brilliant.
All right,
wait a couple of months to buy your games. It's a lot cheaper.
Yeah,
it was cheaper than it was on Steam, I think. Anyway, so I started playing that this week. I haven't played too much of it, but it's sort of a Dickensian, magically high techish. Environment.
Oh yeah,
and it's a bit of a sneak 'em up. You've got the usual collecting items during the levels to get upgrades and things.
Yeah,
it looks lovely. It plays lovely, and I can't wait to play it a bit more to figure out more about it. I've seen that people have said that the stealth bits, the thief 'em up bits, aren't as good as Thief because they're a bit dumbed down.
Well, you got to remember, I mean, the whole reason that Thief the Dark Project is called the Dark Project is because they had this thing called the Dark Engine that they were building at the time, which is absolutely tailored for this kind of stealth gameplay. I'm not sure where it went next from there, but the whole point of Thief is that.
Well, the first mission in the game is an optional mission where you get to play hide and seek with a girl who you... The daughter of the person you work for.
Right.
And that's where it teaches you the stealth, which I thought that was a really nice way.
Yeah,
it's a lovely thing. It feels a bit... Now, it's probably wrong to say this. It feels a bit like cross between Ankh-Morpork.
Yeah.
But without the humour. And Fable 3.
I have not played Fable 3. I must get around to that.
It just got that sort of industrialised feel to it.
That's sort of what you're getting going on in the background in the Thief series as well.
Yeah, it's very much Thiefy, but just a bit more. So yeah, it's definitely been based on the ideas of Thief.
Yeah, now, steampunk ahoy.
Of course, it's by Arkane Studios.
I love Arkane Studios. Yes. I want to have their children.
So they can do whatever we want, we don't care.
They made Arx Fatalis, which was fantastic. Dark Messiah of Might and Magic, also fantastic. And I think they did a lot of world design for Skyrim as well.
They're also currently working on Bioshock Infinite.
Oh, okay.
Because they've farmed massive chunks of Bioshock Infinite out to several studios.
Arkane Studios now make an interesting dungeon romp.
Yeah, so it's really good so far. I need to put loads more hours into it. I haven't had time yet, but I'm looking forward to it. Next, I will say Anno 2070.
Oh, you're still playing that?
Or near... year along those lines.
I gather that's become something of an obsession for you at the moment.
Maybe. Yes, it's...
Oh. So how are you doing with that then? Is it you're following some story campaign?
Yeah, I'm still
thing.
Following the story campaign.
Uh-huh. And there's a large amount of story-based resource gathering and management going on.
The problem is each level takes a day and a half to play. Or day and a half to 2 days.
Quite a meaty, solid thing then. I hope there's not too many levels.
Oh no, I'm really nearly out of levels. It's just I'm sort of getting one done a weekend.
How much I've seen you doing a bit of the combat and a bit of the quite a lot of the resource management. Is the combat a sort of a token thing to just give you something you're building towards?
I'm building towards the combat, and it's about to go really combat-y.
So so it's not really a sort of command and conquer style experience.
No, you really are
building cities and infrastructures and all the rest of it.
But it started putting me on a military footing.
Okay. It's quite a gradual introduction to the military production, but you still have to have a functioning society behind it all to build these things. Yes. Yeah.
I finally managed to balance my economy.
Ah, excellent. Yay. Well done. No, that was causing you some considerable stress.
It was. Yeah, you have to be very careful about taxation and trying to encourage people to get promoted at work.
Uh-huh, right.
It's weird. You promote people at work through manipulating taxes and making them happy.
Okay.
I'm not entirely sure the company has anything to do with it.
So you're ready to become Chancellor then if the call comes
definitely.
Up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If I had any complaints, it's that the plot is a little too slow and weirdly dull. But the day-to-day just building cities is...
So there's not a huge amount of cinematic plot twists and cutscenes and everything. It's just every so often a little head will pop up in the corner telling you we need this for that.
There are in-game cutscenes where just the camera flying around while stuff does stuff and people have voiceover. But so far the story's been so predictable.
Well, there can be dangers in vast overproduction.
Yeah, there can be. It doesn't need any more, just the plot could have done with a bit more writing.
Okay.
But apart from that, I really like it.
Yeah, yeah, it does look like a very pleasing city management type of game.
Yeah. But there's not a lot more you can say about it, because I've probably said it in the previous weeks.
Hmm.
Now, we move on to the iPhone games.
Oh, okay.
Oh, there's a lot of these.
Oh, I played an iPhone game. Do you want to hear about it?
Oh, what did you play?
I played Temple Run 2.
Ah, yes.
Which is surprisingly compelling, although I'm still not quite sure about the whole setup. Why is that giant horse skull monkey thing chasing me in the first place?
Did I
steal his banana?
Yeah.
Okay. I like it. It is very clever. I mean, the cash shoppery of it all is a bit transparent and ignorable, but just the basic gameplay, use the phone, tilt it, swipe to jump over things and under things, tilting to grab the coins and stuff. It's a simple, cheap and cheerful experience which occupies a small amount of time, but also uses the platform well.
It does.
Makes use of the gyro features and the touch screen well. You couldn't see that working on a PC.
No, it would never work on a PC.
You might be able to control it with the mouse and stuff, but no, it absolutely suits its medium well.
I was playing it not yesterday.
Quite enjoyable.
I was sitting waiting to get my hair cut, and I was playing that, and it filled the time perfectly.
Yep, I think that's free from your various app stores and whatnot.
Yeah.
Google Play, I think, is where I found it. But
yeah, and also, of course, on...
I guess on iPhones iOS. You find it in a different thing. Yeah.
You find it in the App Store.
Right.
We only have one App Store.
Good. I don't know what these words mean.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
So I like Temple Run 2 is good for a 5-minute waste of time on the move.
Yes, I've been playing that too. That is very, very excellent.
I was not impressed with Minecraft.
No?
No, it just does not work for me. You've got a toolbar with three items and a ... thing.
You did only have the demo.
I know I only had the demo, but it just I could see instantly this wasn't going to work. It's just, I don't know, you just got to have it on a PC, really, to enjoy Minecraft.
Agree.
I don't know about an Xbox version, but certainly on the Android phones, it's just really awkward to use and somewhat pointless.
It works really reasonably well on iOS. It is a bit clumsy, but the worlds are just too small.
Don't get me wrong, Minecraft itself is a fantastic thing that you should go and get, but get it for the PC.
It plays brilliantly on the Xbox.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
But... PC is where it belongs.
Yeah. And I got Google Sky Map as well, which is an amazing piece of sorcery. I have this device in my pocket. I can point at the sky and it will show me where all the universe is and everything. And it can see through the Earth. It's incredible.
I liked what it did when I held my iPhone up next to it.
Yeah, you put your phone next to mine and it goes all weird and wobbly. Is that magnets? Your magnets interfering with my magnets?
I think so.
We'll cut that out. But yes, Google Sky Maps, which is also free from the utility store there. If your phone has any kind of gyroscopy technology in it, you'll be able to see what the stars actually are called.
I, on the other hand, have been using Starwalk,
okay,
which is by ESA,
right?
And
yours did look a lot fancier than mine.
Yeah. But I'm just saying that because you know.
You have to pay for that one, though.
I think you do.
So, who is the fool now? It's probably still me, isn't it?
It probably is.
All right.
Yes.
On you go.
Okay, what else have I played? I played was two good games, which I won't mention yet, because I did last night have to put out a call on Twitter to get people to suggest games for me to play, because it was driving me nuts. I was playing so many predictable games. Okay, let's start with one of the better of the bunch.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with Skylanders Lost Island.
Is that thing with the toys with the chips in the base and the
table?
Yeah,
you don't need the toys and the chips.
All right.
You still collect the Skylanders.
Okay.
Everyone's familiar with the Skylanders concept.
Let's pretend for the sake of argument and a short life that we can get on with and do other things in that I do know what these are.
Yes. Anyway, there's This is a your usual time-based farmer map type thing.
Oh, yeah.
Where you're
cow clicker.
A cow clicker.
Yeah, see, no I know the terminology.
There's sheep, not cows.
All right.
And you basically put down houses to get people to make stuff, and yada, 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 yada. All of the same as you'd expect.
And at the end, happiness.
And at the end, happiness. Yeah. But this does just about everything right.
Okay.
It's, you're basically collecting Skylanders, isn't it?
Which is the little monster thing.
Which is the little monster. So it's like 59 to collect in total.
Got to catch them all. No, yeah. That's the other thing, isn't it?
And they're from, I think it's 6 or 7 different schools of, you know, magic or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you basically can send them off on missions.
Yep.
And they fly away on a balloon and come back with, and give you money for having done that and get XP, and you can level them up that way. Also, you're getting XP for your realm by clicking on buildings whenever they go through their cycle and generate
a... Oh, never mind the stupid monster toys. What, the bit that's got buildings?
Yes, it's got buildings.
I like buildings more than I like monsters,
I think. Completely filled one island with buildings.
I saw you doing a very rapid click the building to get your things.
Yeah.
Click all the things.
Yeah. Now, the game has the usual problems with the genre, which is you're going nowhere...
What's the point of this?
Yeah, what's the point? I'm just doing this to get to the next level.
Presumably
so I can
you
do
enjoy
this
the activity of clicking buildings to get the things.
That's the problem. They always peter out after not too long because you get to that point where you've needed a reasonable amount to make this building, and then you go up a next level and need a load to the next building and just think, oh, sod that.
I suppose if we were going to be all pretentious and academicable, we would be talking about the difference between a toy and a game at this point.
No, because that's a bollocks thing that I don't subscribe to. They're all games.
Right. Only this one isn't that much fun and doesn't
Some
go
anywhere.
Some games
could be toys, but they're still games. Yeah, no, it's good. It does everything right. It's got a brilliant presentation. It just feels right, plays right.
You can hear polish on it, but if the underlying idea is still not that.
It just has the same problem that all these games of this genre have, which is it doesn't go anywhere, and you just end up thinking,
so if you
why
like,
am I doing this?
If you like the genre, this is a very well-executed
it is. It's
addition to the genre, but if you don't like the genre, this is not going to change your mind, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If we move on to the next one, say, Clash of Clans.
Clash of Clans. I've heard of this, vaguely.
Yes. Still been looking at that.
Yeah.
That one has the problem of it gets to a point where it's impossible to gain any resources. Because you will be raided by enemies.
Are these enemy players?
Enemy players, yes.
Oh, right. Oh, is this not an Australian thing? I remember playing something very similar to this on the website once.
Who will steal loads of your stuff, and you'll never be able to get enough cash to build the next level of stuff. That's where the cash shop comes in, and that's why it's the most... the highest revenue earning game on iOS or something stupid.
PvP
like that.
With pay to win option.
Yeah, and it's silly. No, you don't win the PvP with that. It's just to try and make it so you can keep moving on your city and maybe put defences in.
Alright.
Yeah, it doesn't work. The game is fundamentally flawed, I
play something similar, Travian, I think it was called, on a website thing somewhere, and you sort of you go into it all eager and keen. Yeah, a new game, I'm going to do well. Let's explore the gameplay and look at the things and do some stuff. And you do things and you do things and you do things every day, and then one day you just log in and it's all gone! Because some git next door has just raided you and
you don't
taken
lose
you back
anything.
To zero.
When you when they attack your city, you can watch the replay.
Yeah,
but everything will regenerate in a minute or so afterwards. They've taken your gold and your mana.
Yeah, they can't make you unable to continue playing because that will lose them players.
I've been trying to get an upgrade in for a week and it doesn't work.
You're wasting your time. The way to win at that kind of game is to join a massive, massive alliance. And there'll be forums and boards and things out there.
The alliances only have a maximum of something like 20 people in. And
not formal ones. People who coordinate through websites and stuff and agree not to kill each other and agree to pick on noobs.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah.
Anyway, yes, the game is fundamentally flawed.
Well, yeah. I don't know. Well, was it fun being raided?
No.
Hmm.
And the mechanics of the combat for the actual raiding other people is so insane. You put down people and leave them and they will figure out what to do.
Okay.
Some will target... weapons first, some will target
space barrels.
No, it's not even that. It's just, it is the most
unsatisfying
combat ever. Terrible. Mm.
Well, a good PvP game, I think, is one where you can still enjoy yourself even though you've been beaten, that you've been lost.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't believe that as one.
Okay.
Next.
What else
There's quite a few of these.
You got a big old games folder there on your Padlet.
Airport City.
Yes.
That's another of these where you're building up an airport in the city surrounding it. Now, what is wrong with this one is it's just so badly thought out completely.
Oh, right. Because you can abstract all these games down to essential number tallies and colour blocks.
The problem is I'm seeing the mistakes in them.
Yeah.
And I don't see why I haven't seen the mistakes. The problem with this one is it relies on random items.
Okay.
Which you can also buy from the cash shop, of course.
Of course.
So you have to, you've got your planes you send off to various locations. As you go on, you get better locations as you can buy better planes.
Okay.
Sometimes they all bring back items.
Right.
Which you collect. Now, when you upgrade buildings, like you upgrade your terminal to hold more passengers.
Yeah.
It will need X number of this, X number of that, X number of that.
Okay, you know, with your sofa.
Units, whatever. And you collect these through these flights.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, of course, they're random, so they never turn up when you want, so you keep having to do them. It has this hideous mechanic where occasionally you'll have to repair your plane, which at the moment just takes it out of action for a couple of hours.
Oh, right.
So, you know, can't actually play at the moment.
Yeah, I'm not sold.
No, it
and also, why is it always airports?
I don't know.
Oh.
No, I don't like it at all. It just doesn't work. It's...
I think the sad fact of this is that a lot of the stuff in that store is shovelware. It is literally get the stuff out. It doesn't matter if the idea's been extensively play tested or thought through, as long as we can charge some gems.
Yeah. Next, Heyday.
Yep.
Continue playing that.
Okay.
That has hit the typical problem of all of a sudden I need to make loads more money to be able to do the next level stuff. To be able to build anything.
These games are not designed to end, and they're not designed to be won easily.
The problem
with
this is I've hit
cash.
The point where half the missions I've got require metals. To do that, I need to open a mine and get a smelter, which between it's something like 30...
That's a bit of a stretch for a game about farming.
I think it's 30,000 coins to do that.
How long will that take you to earn?
A couple of weeks.
Hmm.
Yeah, can't be asked. Yeah,
Walk away, my friend. You are done.
Hit a cliff.
You either give them a load of money or you walk away.
I know. And but the thing
you've been playing the demo.
Yeah.
If you give all them that's a load changed of, in this day and age is that the line between demo and full product has become a lot more hazy.
I know, but you give them the money for that, and the next one just gives me another chunk of money. It doesn't work. It's far too monetized.
Well,
it's far too blatant.
Very few people do this stuff for the sheer enjoyment of it.
Next, My Railway.
Making it, that is. Oh, yeah.
Which I'm still blaming Turbod for. That game is flawed because it's not about the core gameplay of running trains around a little track.
Right.
That's an aside. The actual gameplay is about getting friends. You make all your money by visiting your friends' maps and clicking, I think it's 12 times on various
things.
They love
that.
Getting 1,000 points each.
Yeah.
No, they don't see it or anything. And that just makes you hundreds of thousands, way more than you'd make in the actual game. And so, therefore, it's mainly a game about collecting friends. And, of course, you need to have so many friends to unlock each thing, which you can also bypass for coins. But why bother when you can just...
Just walk away and play something else.
So, yeah.
Transport Tycoon, for example.
And the thing about My Railway is the coins are so expensive to do anything. I can make a town that would always sell everything that comes into it, so I wouldn't have to do anything to about the storage filling up.
Right.
But that costs a tenner.
Why bother?
Exactly. Yeah. Again, flawed. They're all flawed.
I paid £5 for a load of gun unlocks each in Planetside 2 during the week, and I don't know. Is this the same thing? I feel like I'm getting a lot more utility out of the things I've paid for.
That's the thing. It's getting way more utility because when you buy something in these, okay, that example in My Railway is not quite the same, I don't think. But when you're buying something in here, all you're doing is giving yourself a stepping point to the next one. When you're getting the guns in, say.
So spending money will just unlock the ability to spend more money.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah,
and
this is where we start to see the cynicism inherent in the genre, I suppose.
Yeah, they're just all...
Have you found anything that is actually just a game? Something that costs a couple of dollars and that doesn't want any more money and that is just letting you get on and
play?
We've
got Games Switch coming.
Good. Okay, good. beginning to lose all hope here.
This is just... We started with Temple Run.
Temple Run's all right.
Temple Run's good.
But they still want a load of money as well, and I can't see why I need to give them any. I'm not sure I've had that much worth enjoyment out of it.
No, the only reason for you, Temple Run, you're basically paying to increase your high score.
Mm.
It's a game about high scores, which is either good or not good. Yeah, so that's about basically all of the ones which I'm really, really annoyed at. And, yeah.
Good.
Those ones are all for research. I'm trying to figure something out, and I am
trying
learning
to understand the genre.
I'm understanding what's going on.
Okay.
Let's move on to a couple of good games.
All right, yes. Tell me about a good game.
Next, The Room.
The Room.
This was suggested to me on Twitter last night. These two games are the ones which were suggested to me on Twitter. I'm glad that they were. I hadn't actually heard of The Room.
Okay.
It's a 3D game about, at the moment, a box.
Okay.
And you're trying to get into the box.
Ah.
And so you basically have to solve several puzzles on it. Ah. And each puzzle leads to another puzzle to another puzzle.
That sounds a bit like Myst.
Quite like Myst, yes. Yeah. Yes, it's like the world's best Crystal Maze episode.
goes on for days.
Yeah, so it might just be you need to turn things in a certain way so you can open a drawer.
Yeah,
or
I see you playing a little bit of it there.
Or you may need to find some way to open. Some of them are very simple. Just slide up, open a container.
So you've got this physical box that you can spin and manipulate, zoom in on, fiddle with bits on the surface of it. It seems almost the exact opposite to Curiosity, in fact.
It is. And it's got... It's way more compelling than Curiosity.
Yeah. Curiosity is just this massive cube that you just keep tapping on to try and chisel bits off.
Yeah. The puzzles so far have ranged from simple ones, which is just slide open a compartment, take out a key, put it in. There are some keys you have to configure by rotating things on the key, which I do wonder about the structural integrity of said key as you try and turn it.
It's magic. It's fine.
There's also ones where you have to find stuff written, hidden away on the box.
Oh, so there's clues and puzzles, sort of mental puzzles arriving on the box as you work through it.
There's a combination which you had to look around on the box so you could find all the places it was written.
Yeah.
It's really good.
It does look good.
I don't know how...
I wonder about longevity and also about replayability.
Replayability...
That was always the problem with Myst. Myst was fantastic the first time you play it, and then the second time onwards, not quite so good, because you know all the answers.
Did you know... Might We Myst 2 had a FMV end bit, or something with a real prop, and that was made by Adam Savage.
Oh, right.
It was a sword
effect. I did not know.
I don't know how far into the game I am. I don't know how far it goes. I don't know what happens when I get into this box. Do I have to do another box or what?
Well, there's a certain amount of repeatability in that you could quite happily design new boxes and just add add-ons and so on. But
at the moment, I think that I've had enough enjoyment out of it and I like it as what it is, so I don't mind if it finishes very soon.
That sounds like a good game. Not like all those other games. Those were bad.
Those games are... are blatant cash grabs.
Yeah.
This game is not, and it's fun, and I like it.
That's the sort of thing I'm hoping to see more of on these handheld devices rather than just, you know, cow clickers.
I just want stuff with... You do stuff and there's an end.
I think it should fit.
You can work towards an end, because if I'm not working towards an end, I don't like it.
Also, I think if it's going to be on a handheld device with little gyroscopes in and accelerometers and touchscreens and stuff, it needs to use those and use them well. Otherwise, I might as well just be playing it on a PC with a bigger screen in a more comfortable chair.
True.
And a longer battery.
And the last game
is
a game called Plague Inc.
Plague Inc. Okay.
Yes, now I meant to play this last year, but never got around to it.
Ah.
And luckily I got reminded about it on Twitter. It's basically you are. It's not entirely clear what you are. Just assume
I like it already.
You are the living manifestation of a disease.
Okay.
And it is your job to wipe out humanity.
Ah.
And so you pick which country you want it to start in.
Yeah.
I've had some success in some countries, less than others.
Right.
And you then, as you go along, you earn DNA points, which you spend on mutations. So you can make it resilient to the cold.
Sounds interesting.
Or make it transmitted by birds.
Oh, wow.
And if you keep an eye on the news, you can see, you know, if there's going to be a large amount of bird migration, you take the bird one.
That does sound novel and interesting.
And it is brilliant.
It's just a really clever idea. I mean, I don't know how well it's executed and it's, you know, it's playable. It's got music and sounds and noises and art.
The music is brilliant. I love the music on the soundtrack.
Mm.
Yeah, it's you basically just playing around, reacting. Mm. So basically you want to get as infectious as you can without killing people.
Yes.
Because the world is working on a cure.
An extremely deadly plague that kills in seconds is not good for transmission.
If you peak too early, some people will survive. So you want to infect everyone, or just before you infect everyone, then ramp up the symptoms until.
And so to do that, you have to react to in-game events and try and configure yourself to be more adaptable based on those and so on. Yeah, that sounds interesting, yeah.
It's a great screen which has the uninfected countries, the infected countries, and the countries that are no more.
Oh, God. Yeah, literally wiping out entire nations.
Yep.
Wow.
I find Greenland's a hard one to crack. I keep forgetting to go for cold, and not enough people go there.
Right.
You've basically got a world map, and you can see planes and boats going around.
Mm, perhaps not best idea for the squeamish, then, or the hypochondriac, this game.
It did make me feel...
Did you feel like you learned anything from it? Is there any
factual... Yeah, we're all going to die.
Any factual goodies in there, or is it entirely a flight of fancy?
It's, well...
Sort of learn more about diseases, or is it just not really that?
No, not really, no. It just makes you feel slightly uncomfortable with the whole what you're doing.
Mm, mm.
I think I may have killed more people in the last day than I have ever before in games.
Wow. So if you're after body counts, this is quite a good one.
Yeah.
Blimey.
Yeah, no, it's really good. Now, it does have...
It does sound really interesting.
It does have a cash shop.
Okay.
Now, the cash shop can be used to unlock mutations and... different disease types.
Can you get those anyway if you're stubborn enough?
Yes, if you if you win, you can unlock them.
Oh, right.
And so that is a good use of a cash shop.
Mm.
If I want a shortcut, I can. If I want to play, I will play.
Right.
Which I approve of.
And you have a clearly defined goal you're working towards there, not just the opportunity to unlock more unlocks.
Yeah. The thing that I really, really dislike about most of those other games is you cannot lose.
Right.
There is absolutely no way to lose. You just do stuff.
Well, that's what I mean when I say toys versus games. You can't lose when playing with a toy. A toy is a toy. It's just a thing. Whereas a game will have conditions of victory and defeat and number of participants.
I still think it's an artificial thing. But, yeah, you need... I need a victory condition. And I need the ability to screw up. I don't want it so that no matter what I do, I will always be moving just slower.
Yeah, well, you've just ruled out quite a lot of MMOs then, really.
Yeah, and that's why I don't play an awful lot of MMOs.
Yeah.
They feel exactly the same way.
I use them differently. For me, they become sort of virtual venues for meeting and chatting with friends.
Yes, but you're currently in Planetside 2.
Is that the ice cream van?
Ice cream van.
Wow, hello, old friend.
I don't know if that came out on the microphone.
Oh, we heard it.
There are absolutely no kids.
It is actually dark, and there are no kids here.
And it is February.
Oh, I've missed the ice cream there.
Apart from that... Yeah.
Anyway, where were we?
I was saying how much I love Plaguing, and I'm going to keep playing that for a while. I started on the iPhone.
Yeah, I'd be interested to hear once you've given it a proper shakedown.
It's on Android as well.
All right, I'll have a look. Yeah.
I started on the iPhone, but very soon decided to play it on the iPad instead, just because it's a nicer gaming device.
Okay.
The screen's bigger.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really, really like it.
Excellent.
And I think that's probably all of the games I've played.
Right then. So what did you learn this week?
I learned that when somebody has a crazy name idea for a name that you assume has been taken already, maybe it won't be.
And I learned that those Cadbury's egg and spoon things are rubbish.
Oh, those, they look rubbish.
Yeah, I had a go. I thought, you know, seeker of new experience that I am, I thought I'd have a go. And it's basically like a cream egg, but without the cream and a much, much thinner shell. And it's got this weird mousse stuff in. And they give you this tiny spoon, which I imagine if you're five looks enormous, but I had troubles holding. And I got covered in chocolate when I was trying to hold the thing because they don't provide egg cups with it like they do in the bloody advert. And so in the end, I just... gomped the whole thing in one go, and it was really disappointing. So there we go. I've taken a hit, so you don't have to, dear listener. Stick to Cadbury's cream eggs, much better.
I don't like Cadbury's cream eggs.
Well, then you're screwed.
They're
really
far too sweet.
You're out of luck.
Yeah. Anyway,
so do your spiel.
Yes, you can follow us on Twitter and catch us on various games. Mm-hmm. You can get the details for stuff on howtomurdertime.com.
There's a how to find us in games tab on there.
There is indeed. You can, if you've got an iPhone, add me on Game Center as Senyek so I can have a look and see what games you're playing and find new experiences. And if you have any suggestions for games on iOS, please tell me because I want to play as many as
Where's
I can.
Where's the good stuff? That's what we want to know.
No, it doesn't have to be good. It just has to have one interesting aspect for me to like it. That's all it takes with a game.
Fair enough.
You can also catch me on Moving On, which last week was Rear Window.
Oh, okay.
A film I bounced off
Hitchcock
of.
Classic?
Yeah. I don't know. I just couldn't get into it this time. I remember it being way better.
Find out how he didn't get on with it over
and
there.
And our next film, which I think is next week or week after, is going to be Wing Commander.
Oh, this is quite clearly your choice that week.
Why'd you say that?
Yeah.
I like Wing Commander. And also... no, actually, I don't...
You've run out of stuff, haven't you?
I don't do anything else.
So with that, we'll see you next time.
Goodbye.